Hi. My name is Bokshu, and I study here at the Village Zendo. In his 93rd fascicle of Shobo Genzo, our founding Japanese teacher Dogen Zenji wrote, "There is a simple way to become a Buddha. When you refrain from unwholesome actions, are not attached to birth and death, and are compassionate toward all sentient beings, respectful to seniors and kind to juniors, not excluding or desiring anything, with no thoughts or worries, you will be called a Buddha. Seek nothing else." So that sounds straightforward, doesn't it? Dogen is usually quite elliptical and poetic in his writings, so the clarity here and the simplicity of expression is quite striking. Because it's quite striking, we'd better be careful with this passage that seems so simple and straightforward. Dogen is assuming that somebody somewhere wants to be a Buddha. Does anyone here want to be a Buddha? Oh, we have several people who want to be a Buddha. Great. I'm glad that some of us admitted that we want to be a Buddha. Here's something that I'm learning to do. I'm learning not to pretend to be different or better than I am. And that includes admitting that I want to be better than I am. And admitting that I want to be better than you. I can admit that, and I can admit that it's embarrassing to admit that. It's embarrassing to admit how insecure and critical of myself I can be. And yet, when I admit these feelings of embarrassment, insecurity, and self-doubt, the feelings are immediately quelled. If you want to overcome your embarrassment about something, just embarrass yourself a little bit more. The Buddha himself wanted to be different. Or perhaps initially he thought that he wanted to be better. The Buddha was royalty, so it's hard to see how you could get any better than that. It took some real vision on his part to see that there was something else, something that he might be missing. If Shakyamuni hadn't had that insight, would he have left his luxurious palace and almost starved to death in his search for the truth? Would we be sitting here now? I doubt it. So when I want to be different or better, whatever the form that takes, I'm in very good company. The Buddha himself wanted to be a Buddha before there was even an idea of what a Buddha could be. It's okay that I want to be better than I am now, or better than you, as long as I remember that I don't know what better is, or where it comes from, or who wants to be better. If I remember those things, I'm immediately better than anyone. And yet, I am exactly myself and intimately connected to all of you. Now, I am none other than myself and not separate from you when I recognize that I'm enthralled with an idea I don't understand and didn't create. The idea of better. To want to be a Buddha is a form of slavery, which is ironic since Buddhism is about seeking liberation. The first step in gaining just a tiny bit of liberation is something Dogen doesn't mention in this passage. The first step is just to see things as they are. This includes first and foremost seeing ourselves as we are. How are we right now? Before trudging on the long and difficult path toward better, we'd better get to know where we stand right now. And we get to know where we stand right now by sitting. When we sit, we see ourselves and we see how we see ourselves. That's the real point of sitting, isn't it? To experience ourselves just as we are right now, including our ideas of how we are and how we should be. Can we actually see that? On the cushion, we experience various aspects of ourselves. These aspects arise in our minds. We watch our minds operate and then let go, coming back to our breath, to our koan, to whatever our practice might be. On the cushion, we practice coming back to something that pries us away from the ideas that fill our minds and rule our days and nights, including the idea of being better. We need these ideas to function in our society, to work and relate with other people. But they aren't real. They're arbitrary, and often they can be quite alienating. On the cushion, we let go of our ideas about ourselves while not forgetting that those ideas, unreal as they might be, are essential to our survival in this world. It's a juicy place to explore. I've got these ideas in my head, and they've got no substance or reality, and yet these ideas are absolutely vital to my survival. So I can practice letting go of the idea that I want to be different or better, and the insecurities feeding that idea when I sit. And as I gain experience in doing that on the cushion, it gradually becomes possible for me to do that off the cushion. I take the ability to let go of myself and my ideas off the cushion and into my daily life. Neutrally and compassionately observing what's going on. My ideas about myself and others as I go about my daily routine. Liberation doesn't come about because we fixed or improved ourselves. Look around you. This isn't Home Depot. Liberation comes about because we gradually make space for the person we truly are. We open to ourselves. We become available to ourselves. We allow ourselves to be who we are, and also allow ourselves to understand that we don't actually know who we are. And through that simple, compassionate process of allowing ourselves to experience ourselves, we do actually change. And we change in ways that are far subtler, more mysterious, and more refined than anything that we could engineer consciously for ourselves. Krishnamurti said, "To observe without evaluating is the highest form of intelligence." This is analogous to our second pure precept. Bearing witness to the joy and suffering of the world, this is doing good. If I want to do good, I can bear witness to myself. I can be compassionate with myself for wanting to not feel inadequate, to not feel lonely, to not feel superior or anxious or greedy, reactive, impatient, etc. etc., etc. Compassion in this case means just seeing what's there and tolerating and allowing what's there. Gradually, as my practice has matured, the zone of what I can tolerate and allow has expanded. And that expansion has given me breathing room. And this is nothing less than freedom. Freedom from myself. Because I allow myself to be who I am. What a paradox. I become available to a delicate process that has nothing to do with my deluded ideas about becoming different or better. Perhaps I can give a practical application of what I'm talking about. Yesterday we had some visitors from the Soto Zen Buddhism North America office. It's quite a mouthful. They came to videotape interviews with people here, Roshi and students. They videotaped our Zazen, they videotaped our walking meditation and our Orioki. I was the registrar for the Zazen Kai yesterday, and I was very nervous about these visitors. They were also, it seemed to me, very nervous about us. Because of my practice, I was able to taste the flavor of my own insecurity and the different, yet intimately connected flavor of their insecurity as the visit unfolded. Registrars have to get to the Zendo pretty early when we have Zazen Kai. Unfortunately, I never manage to have breakfast at home when I'm the registrar for Zazen Kai. So I bring cereal and milk to the Zendo, and after I've done all my little preparations for the day, I sit at the registration table, watch the door, take the money, and check attendance while I have my breakfast. Sometimes, though, my eating extends into the first sitting period. Very unobtrusively, as quietly as possible, I continue having my breakfast. This reminds me of what our ancestor Keizen Jokin, who was mentioned by Roshi yesterday in her beautiful talk, how he gained the approval of his teacher. If my memory of this story is correct, Keizen said, "A jet black ball speeds through the night." And his teacher, Tetsu Gikai, said, "Not yet. Speak further." And Keizen said, "When I am hungry, I eat. When I am thirsty, I drink." So I was hungry, and I ate, very quietly. And while eating, I noticed one of our visitors watching me. Of course, I was aware that this might happen. And at the same time when it happened, I realized there was no way to know what was passing through this man's mind. Was he even seeing me? Sometimes we look at people, we don't even see them. We just happen to be looking. If he was seeing me, what did he think? Did he think anything? Maybe he thought I was an abomination, a disgrace. Maybe he wished he could have had some of my cereal. Maybe he thought I was regal. Or maybe he thought I was ridiculous. Or perhaps he wondered what I was thinking of him as he watched me. If this situation had arisen a year or two ago, I would have been consumed by paranoia and shame. Yesterday, I could sense those feelings stirring inside me, and yet I simultaneously recognized that they were without substance. This recognition occurred on two levels. First, the feelings themselves were almost abstract. They were so muted that I had almost no emotional reaction at all. Second, on an intellectual level, I realized that there were so many uncertainties involved in the situation that whatever feelings I had were completely without foundation. As the visitor looked at me, I felt as if I were outside the situation, as if I was in a laboratory running an experiment on a person who looked like me, assisted by a person who did not look like me. My transgression, if that's what it was, offered me an opportunity to see a part of myself, a very strong behavioral pattern, receding into the distance, and to see that the pattern was being replaced by no pattern. This no pattern took the form of a series of questions that would never be answered, but that did not need to be answered. The questions were unanswerable, and yet an accurate representation of reality at that precise moment. When we worry about how other people see us, we open the door to enormous suffering. That doesn't mean we should just ignore other people or be insensitive to their needs. Rather, we should not oppress ourselves by trying to make other people like us. In Dogen's passage, it says, "There is a simple way to become a Buddha. When you refrain from unwholesome actions, are not attached to birth and death, and are compassionate toward all sentient beings, respectful to seniors, and kind to juniors, not excluding anything, not desiring anything, with no thoughts or worries, you will be called a Buddha. Seek nothing else." You will be called a Buddha. By whom will you be called a Buddha? Do they even know what they're talking about when they call you a Buddha? In any case, being called a Buddha is not the same as being a Buddha. And if you could be a Buddha, what then? All of this doesn't quite extinguish my desire to be a Buddha. What about you? Dongshan said, "If you see the verbal teachings of the Buddhas and patriarchs as if they were your mortal enemies, only then will you have qualifications for penetrating the study." Since Dongshan is one of the patriarchs, we must apply his own philosophy to his own teachings and treat him as our mortal enemy. Nanchuan said, "People these days walk around with Buddha on their shoulders. When you hear me say that the mind is not Buddha and wisdom is not the path, you gather together and try to figure it out. You cannot figure me out. If you could wrap empty space up into a staff and hit me with it, then you might figure me out." Linji said, "Fellow believers, only when you have committed the five crimes that bring on the hell of incessant suffering will you finally gain emancipation." This Buddha is an inadequate Buddha, a lonely Buddha, a superior Buddha, an anxious Buddha, a greedy Buddha, a reactive Buddha, an impatient Buddha, a brilliant Buddha, a serial eating Buddha. What about you? How do you see yourself now? Are you a Buddha? When have you ever not been a Buddha? In the immortal words of Dogen, seek nothing else.